Okay, it's time to start. It's the dinner bell rings at 4:45, but we're going to go till 5. I mean, 1 hour. I mean, you know, it's okay, right? Okay, good. For those of you that were hoping that I would get through every hymn in the hymnal, I'm sorry.
You promised.
I know. I did make that promise, but it was just a joke. But I am a great lover of hymns. I always have been. And let me give you just a little background for those of you who don't know me and why this all is. I love all kinds of hymns. My father was an EUB minister, Evangelical United Brethren Church, which merged with the Methodists in the 60s. That meant that we had the morning service, and those were a certain kind of hymn. And then we had the evening service, and those were different hymns than the morning. And then we had the Wednesday night prayer meeting. In my younger days, I did not play for those. Hazel Martin was at the piano. And so when we sang Bright in the Corner Where You Are, Hazel was right there doing it. Then we had the missionary meetings, and we had the revival meetings. So, I mean, you know, all of that. And all of that, of course, I later realized when this guy named Garrison Keillor called me up and said he was starting a radio show, and I didn't know him, and he didn't know me, and he said he was looking for somebody who knew classical music and hymns. And I said, that would be me. And he said, do you really know a lot of hymns? And I said, Garrison, every hymn you know, I know. The difference will be who knows more verses. And that was also true, because we came from, he was not EUB, but we were rather similar backgrounds. And over the years, it's been kind of fun, because he will every once in a while ask one of his staff, this week I'd like to sing so-and-so. And, you know, a couple of these lovely staff people who are Jewish don't have a clue what he's talking about. So they call up Philip. Hey, Philip, what's this hymn that he sings a line and we're trying to figure out what it is, but it isn't necessarily the first line of the hymn. And I say, oh, well, here's what he's talking about. And then I, you know, I've got all these old hymn books, so send it over to him so everything's fine. So lots of hymn singing in the family. Then I, in ninth grade, was my first organ job, and so I've had one ever since. And I went first to a small covenant church for a year. And then when I was in 10th grade, I went to the big covenant church downtown and had a three-manual molar pipe organ. Oh, I remember that. That was really exciting. And I was there for a number of years, about five. And that was that got me also then, in terms of hymns, to get to know a whole bunch of the Swedish covenant hymns. So, and then of course the Christmas morning service, the Julita service at 6 o'clock, which was always done in Swedish, thank you. And so we learned a lot of those kinds of hymns. And then I went to Holy Trinity Lutheran in South Minneapolis, and I was there for about 4 years. And then when I, in 1969, I went to Plymouth Congregational Church, and where I have now just finished my 40th year. And I am the third organist there since 1900. So we don't change real often. You know, we kind of stick with what we are. And I have promised them I'm only going to stay 25 more years. That's it. Then I'm done. So, Plymouth has been an interesting place because, as opposed to, say, people who move to a town and they're looking for a Lutheran church or a Methodist church or a Baptist church, Presbyterian, whatever, Plymouth Congregational is this big downtown church, which is, I would have to say, I think I'm stretching it if I say 10% of the people there grew up congregational. I would say most of the people who go to Plymouth Church are former something else. You know, lots of former Methodists, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Baptists, Unitarians, Catholics. It's just everything. So then when people say, so what's the hymn tradition at Plymouth? I say, it's the Plymouth tradition. I mean, you know, you come into that and you sort of learn about what hymns there are. And we tend to do a lot of hymns that are maybe not in the hymn book, but there's some wonderful hymn writers from all over. And so I've found a number of them. In fact, I gave Eric a hymn that I hope we're going to do by a wonderful Norwegian fellow, Egil Hovland, that we have done. And then a number of hymns have also just been written for us. There's a very special friend in England named Ian Kellum, who is a marvelous hymn writer. And we have done a number of his hymns and have also suggested them then to other people. But today, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the hymnal that you all have here at Holden, I mean, among others, and just give you a little bit of background. I mean, the hymnal to me is like a wonderful dictionary in which you can explore all kinds of interesting things, more than perhaps you imagine. Hymns, what makes a good hymn? And what makes a hymn memorable? There are many wonderful tunes that we have, and some of them people remember, and others they don't. Since I'm not expecting that everybody knows musical language, I would just say that one of the things that makes a hymn easy to sing is if it is stepwise. Stepwise means you go down the scale and up the scale. You know, you don't have a lot of leaps around. Now, there are some exceptions and some wonderful hymns that have leaps, but basically it is. So one of the reasons a hymn like Joy to the World is memorable is it just goes up and down the scale. So it's very, very simple for people to sing. You have that kind of stepwise motion going for a hymn. Some hymns, of course, that's a composed hymn. Some are folk songs that have been arranged. But even take a folk song like the Welsh tune, Arhydi Nos. Couple little jumps, but they're so small, and it's very easy for people to sing. And so those kind of hymns tend to be the ones that people often grab onto because note-wise, they're easy to go up and down the scale. Now, you could go up and down the scale and not be memorable. I mean, you know, you could be going, you know, I think we'll forget about that hymn, whatever it is, you know. But so you know, there's also the thing about just having a certain amount of expertise in being able to write a tune. But that kind of idea works. Some hymns have little steps that are okay because they make a pattern. Let's say if you were singing, St. Denio, Immortal Invisible. Okay, so there's these little leaps, but there's a bunch of them. And so that's kind of easy to kind of remember as a tune. Or if you take a tune like Nun Dankit. Stepwise, you know, and there's a reason why that would be familiar. Or if I said I'm going to write a new tune that's not stepwise, and I said, shall we all sing together? You know, you'd say, could I hear that about 100 more times, please, you know, right? Then I'll have it. So, you know, so that's a really important thing about what makes certain hymns singable, memorable, why people do it. If you take just a moment, look at the very back of your hymnal. At page 1189. And this is a very important part of the hymnal that people often never get around to. So what you have here at the very end of it, which is very useful, is first of all, you have, they call it sources of service music and hymns. It's basically, for the most part, a list of the composers and the poets. Some hymnals separate them. This particular hymnal puts them all together. So you've got some composers, some poets, and they're all there. Then if you keep going and you get over to page 1195, you have a list of all the tunes. Now, I mentioned last night at Music Vespers, you have to have in a, for every hymn, you have to have two titles. One title for the words, one title for the tune. Because if you are trying to sing a hymn, it may be that it is a hymn that has more than one tune for it. For example, if you are in this country and you said, I want to sing, but no, I'm going to put it the other way. If you're in England and you said, I want to sing the tune, I want to sing, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear, and you're expecting that you're going to hear, you won't, because they don't sing that tune in England. They sing, sing, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear, and they say, yes, that's what we're singing. And then someone would look at you and say, which tune did you prefer? Oh, dear. So you have to have a tune as well as, a title for the tune as well as a title for the words. Okay? So that's why you have here this whole list of tunes. Now, the name, and we'll talk about this a little bit, the name of the tune can be anything that the person who wrote the tune wishes to call it, or if the person didn't give it a name, it might be the name that was given to it by someone who's editing a hymn book and said, oh, I found this great tune, doesn't have a name, I'll give it a name. And it can be anything. Many times the name of a tune has to do with the sense of the words in the hymn. Other times it's the name of the person. Otherwise, like I mentioned last night, we have that the hymn that we know, the words Onward Christian Soldiers, and the tune is called Saint Gertrude, and that was because Arthur Sullivan, who wrote that tune, was staying at someone's house, and this lady's name was Gertrude, so he just canonized her. And so that's why it's called St. Gertrude. And so, but you can call it anything. For my wife's 50th birthday, our friend Ian wrote a wonderful hymn, beautiful hymn, using the words by John Addison, the spacious firmament on high. And he decided to call the tune Carelle. The first three letters are Carolyn and the last four are Brunel. So why not? It's called Carell, you know. And for my one of my birthdays, it was the anniversary at Plymouth Church. That's right, 25th anniversary. He wrote a hymn called Jubilee Brunel. You know, well, you can call it anything you want to. So there are these names to it. And then if you go a little bit further on, you'll also notice that the last thing in the book, starting on 1205. I'm sorry. Go to 1199, because we'll be coming back to this. Here's the metrical index of tunes. And this is important because every tune has to have a meter. And we'll talk about some hymns and how those meters work in a minute. And then last of all, at the very end, you have on 1205 the titles of the tune of the hymns, or the first line, if that's the way people kind of remember how they go. So with that kind of information, let's today just we're going to do a little bit of Advent and Christmas. So would you, there's all this opening service material, but we're not going to do that. So would you just go back near the beginning to the very first actual hymn in the hymnal, which is number 239, which in fact it says hymns. That's a good place to begin. So we have this hymn, Hark the Glad Sound. Now, let's sing a verse. Do you all know Hark the Glad Sound? No. Sorry, okay. I mean, you know, you come from all these different backgrounds, many of them Lutheran, but maybe not everybody sings these hymns. All right, so. And you see how wonderful, this is not stepwise, but it sounds like a trumpet call. Like. Okay, and so it's like, oh, attention, everybody. There it is, okay? Hark, two, three. Trumpet call, and then you kind of do stepwise, and then, okay, and you end halfway through the hymn on a low note. But now, the big moment is coming, and you are going to come to the highest note in the whole piece. Which is sort of the climax, and then you're going to go back down. So the hymn really is very kind of carefully thought out in terms of how you'll make it work. This, you'll notice at the bottom of the page there, the text is by a great hymn writer, Philip Doddridge, and the music was by Thomas Weiss, who wrote this tune, Chesterfield. I don't remember why it's called Chesterfield, but obviously he gave it that name. Now, it's a hymn, if you'll notice underneath Chesterfield, it says CM. And if you say, I don't know what that means, well then all you'd have to do is go back to page 1199, and you would notice that if you did, you would see it says SM, and then it says CM. Ah, CM, that's what I've got. Common meter, 8686. That means that 8686 means that you're going to have that many syllables. So when you go, hark the glad sound, the Savior comes, that's 8. The Savior promised long, 6. Let every heart prepare a throne, 8. And every voice a song. This is a really common meter. Lots of texts are in that meter. So rather than always having to go 8686, they just decided, somebody did, that those are all what we're going to call common meters. So they just put CM. So every time you see a CM, you'll know it's 8686. Can't be anything else. Okay? And so this particular hymn has this idea. Now, because of that fact, you would think, aha, that means, Philip, that I could take any of these tunes back here that say CM, and I could transfer them. I could sing a different tune to these words. There's one problem with that. And here's where, you know, because I've heard people try to do this, and it works a lot, but it doesn't always work. Because this text goes dun, 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 dun. Is that strong beat? Hark. Many pieces go da, 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 with what I call a pickup note, you know? So, for instance, oh, here's another CM. Oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise. But it isn't oh, for a, it's oh, for a. So if you tried to sing Asmund, you know. All right, let's sing that, but sing these words, okay? Here we go. Okay, two, go. It somewhat works, but doesn't quite work, because the idea would be that you'd want hark as your big word. And you'd have to go, and instead with Asmund, you'd have to go, hark the glad sound. So the becomes the big deal. So it doesn't really work. You know. So you see what I'm talking about? It depends on where if the, as we used to say, the accent on the wrong syllable. Right? Okay, so you kind of have to be careful with you go through that. Now, putting together a hymnal is a really huge deal. And I respect anyone that does that. I have been working for a number of years on a new hymnal for Plymouth Church, and eventually I'll get it done. And I'm doing it just for Plymouth. I mean, if other people end up using it, great, but I'm doing it for that unusual mixed bag congregation of people. One of the things that you have to do when you're doing a hymnal, is decide how many verses you want people to sing. You all know that, for instance, a lot of those old chorales of Martin Luther had, you know, 12, 14, 16 verses. And people today are just not as likely to want to sing that many. You know, they turn to that hymn and go, whoa, maybe not. Let's try four verses and go from there. So you get a hymn like Hark the Glad Sound, and you see, okay, it's got four stanzas. Well, it does here. Originally, it had seven. And what's interesting about it is that, first of all, the verses that are omitted here are, this is a was written as a hymn for Advent, as it is, and it had originally some other verses that really talked more about the person of Christ coming to earth. So another verse that is not here, that was originally the second verse, said, on him the Spirit largely poured exerts its sacred fire. Wisdom and might and zeal and love his holy breast inspire. So they decided, well, we won't need that one. So that one got, it's often left out, not just by the Lutherans. Okay, right. The other one that's left out, and I do understand why it's left out, though it's quite marvelous, is the original verse 4. He comes from the thick films of vice to clear the mental ray and on the eyeballs of the blind to pour celestial day. But people don't like to sing about eyeballs. And so, you know, it just sort of kind of, it got left out. It was the only eyeball hymn we had, too, you know, right. So you could add it back in. I do love it. I love it very much, you know, right. But there you have, you know, a little bit about this one. Now flip over to 243. I'm just going to talk briefly about some of these as we move ahead. This hymn, all you need to, that I just want to mention, it's called Lost in the Night, and the tune is called Lost in the Night, whoever decided to do that. It's a little folk song from Finland. And I will never forget being in Sweden years ago, and it was during December, and I said, oh, do you know that little tune? And I said, you know, it's sung a little lost in the night, do the heathen still languish? And I played it for my Swedish friends, and they just started laughing away. And I said, you know, what's so funny? Well, do you know the original of this? And I said, no, I had no clue. Oh, well, it's a folk song about this woman and her boyfriend's gone out in the storm, and he's lost in the night. And they can't find him, but she's hoping he'll be coming soon. had nothing to do with Jesus at all, you know, had to do with her boyfriend, you know. But then what ended up happening was F. Melius Christiansen, who knew the tune, when he came to St. Olaf, then he did a setting of it. You know, well, most people didn't know the Finnish original. They just thought this was this lovely, wonderful tune. And so, you know, in this country, it's become kind of, you know, very lovely and sacred. But if you sang this over in Finland, they'd all kind of laugh because they go, yeah, this is the one about the boyfriend out on the storm and where he's gone. So that's all you need to know about that one. Go over to 246. Hark, a thrilling voice is sounding. Hymnals tend to be, tend to renew themselves about every 20, 30 years. In every denomination, they tend to do that because certain things change and words become obsolete. New melodies are created that people want to hear. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why. One of the words, several of the words that have often been deleted in today's world are words like ye and thou. I'm frankly kind of sorry. They seem to be okay for Shakespeare, but we wouldn't change Shakespeare. But anyway, things like ye have all become you. And I don't mind you at times, but there are times when ye is a nicer word than you. You know, so I have some qualms about certain things. But nonetheless, you have to sort of make a decision and make a point. I think the first hymn that sort of got my attention was about 1980, when we were singing one Sunday morning, Rejoice Ye Pure in Heart, you know, the tune Meriton. You know, that one. Wonderful, great hymn. And the second verse, in its original form, which was in everybody's hymnals, says, strong men and maidens meek. And I remember thinking, I don't think we want to be singing that anymore. I don't think we have meek maidens anymore around here. And so that was the very first hymn in which I figured out, I have to change the words to this. Because I didn't want to just throw out the hymn. It's just a great hymn. But I couldn't leave that in. So that's when I first started saying, let's start looking at words and thinking, what do we want to do to make them inclusive? But at the same time, I've always tried to be very careful, because you don't want to lose sense of the poetry and the loftiness of it. There are some people who over the years, and I can, not in this hymnal, but I've seen in other hymnals, have just adopted the rule, whenever you see this word, put in this word. That just doesn't work. You know, you can't always separate, you can't always put, you know, that when thou is there and you want to get rid of it, you've got to put, you know, this, or when you see he, you got to put all, or put some. I mean, it simply does not, that kind of easy usage doesn't work, because it all depends on the scans of the poetry and how it works. But that was the one for me that got me going. So one of the things that at 246 in this hymn you'll find is that, first of all, of course, in its original, this hymn they never used the word you, of course, back in the 19th century. So the end of the first verse, cast away the works of darkness, it was originally all ye children of the day. And that would have happened, you know, all the way through. You would have also found that in the original, one of the things, look at the second verse, awakened by the solemn warning from earth's bondage, let us rise. And of course, in many bits of poetry, earth is feminine. And so the original here would have said, Christ, our sun, all sloth dispelling, shines upon her morning skies. Referring to earth. Now, this hymn has had, in the first measure, Hark a Thrilling, has had a lot of different words. The original word was not thrilling. This came much later. What it was originally was the word awful, as in AWFUL, meaning full of awe. It was awe-full. But what, of course, has happened is that over the decades and centuries, the word awful has taken on such a different meaning that to refer to, like another hymn, before Jehovah's awful throne, you know, that's now been changed to awesome, because people don't want to say awful in that kind of context. But the original said, hark, an awful voice is sounding, you know, which made great sense, except not today, we don't want to do that anymore. And then it was changed to, hark, a herald voice is sounding. But here they've gone to, hark, a thrilling voice. And other hymnals have done exactly the same thing. One change they made, which frankly I don't like, but, you know, this is just, folks, you understand, I really basically like this hymnal. I'm just giving you quibbles, you know, right. But the second verse, wakened by the solemn warning, the original was, the first word is startled. And I love the word startled by the solemn warning. And I mean, to me, that's kind of like, whoa! I mean, that's kind of, you know, to be startled is a lot more than to be wakened. It's time to get up now, wake, you know, right? You know, so startled to me is a much stronger word to do. Okay, then flip over to number 257. And here we have the wonderful hymn, O Come Emmanuel. Now, this hymn, actually originally a plain song, it was a chant in its original form, and it has gone through a number of permutations. And what has happened in this hymnal is to kind of go back to its origin as a plain song melody. It isn't the original plain song melody. The original was something more like this. It was a more of an ornament in the middle, you know. But that got a little too complicated for group singing, so they kind of simplified it to what you have here. Then in the 19th century, they barred it. In other words, they made it into 4/4 time, rather than being a... So then it became... Right, exactly. So that, you know, that it could be all sung that way. But the original way of doing it was more this kind of idea. So the thought here is that you would sing these as phrases rather than strong beats. So just sing a verse once. Okay, just think of them as phrases. Here we go. Oh God, oh God. Okay? Now, you'll notice down at the bottom of the page, they talk about the fact that it was originally a set of what are called the great O antiphons, because each of them starts with the word O. Of course, it was originally in Latin, but even so, they kept that in the translation here that John Mason Neal did. So that you have the seven O's, and the idea being that they were to be done all the way up to the day before Christmas, till Christmas Eve. And so you were to sing one of them. We've done something at Plymouth Church, which we do always a big Advent thing with all ages on the fourth Sunday in Advent. And we've often taken and used all seven verses and sung one, and then something happens, and then another, and so that eventually you have all seven of them. You know, obviously it's all done on one day, as opposed to 7 days. Now, originally, let me just write this kind of a little bit of fascinating information here, that the next time you sing this, you can share this with your friends. Okay, so you've got, you know, these seven O's, okay? And if you'll notice, you've got this verses right there, the seven. And what you have here is, let me just real quickly, I'm not as used to doing this as others are, so you'll pardon. Last of all, of course, Emmanuel. So these were the seven. All right. So you'll notice that these correspond in Latin to what you have here at the bottom: wisdom, Lord of Might, etc. So it's those are good translations. You have all seven of them right there, ending with Emmanuel. But one of the interesting things about it. You know, you think, I'm thinking now about this anonymous person who wrote this back hundreds of years ago. What's fascinating is they didn't, let's see, can I think of another verse that has O? Can I think of another one that has O? What have I got? Well, what you've got, which is kind of wonderful, okay, you got all these O's, and here you have S-A-R-C-O-R-E, Sarcore, okay? So, if you go backwards with that and have E-R-O-C-R-A-S, then you have the Latin ero cross. And ero cross means I will be present tomorrow leading up to Christmas. You know, so somebody very carefully, I mean, so my point just being it wasn't sort of a whim, but somebody very carefully decided the order of these so that when you thought of it in reverse order, you were preparing for Christmas in putting it together. Okay, that's enough for that one. Go over to 270. Hark, the herald angels sing. And let's talk just a minute, first of all, about the words of Charles Wesley. Wesley, who wrote this in 1739, originally decided to write five hymns for the five feast days. He was going to do Christmas, Epiphany, Easter, Ascension, and Pentecost. And all of them were in the meter 7777. Now, you will notice that it says 7777D and refrain. D simply means doubled. So you've got Hark the Herald Angels Sing, 7. Glory to the Newborn King, 7. Peace on Earth and Mercy Mild, 7. God and Sinners Reconciled, 7. And then you got four more of those, so it's just doubled. Okay? And then over on the next page, you've got a refrain, okay? Which has another odd number of syllables, which is why they said and refrain. You'll find very few in the back of the book that have 7777 doubled and refrain. So you are going to be using this tune. You are not going to try to find another tune for it. So he did these, in a minute we'll try an example. Now, originally, of course, Charles Wesley, when he wrote these words, the original text said, Hark, how all the welkin rings. W-E-L-K-I-N, welkin. Which went away because people had forgotten what a welkin was. And welkin, which is kind of too bad, because welkin refers to the sky where the deity live. That's the welkin. And so the idea being, it wasn't just the herald angels, but it was all the deity up there singing glory to the newborn king. But then people forgot about the welcome, so away it went. You have here then basically, if you understand what I'm saying, the verse, the 7777, only went as far as God and sinners reconciled. That was one of his verses. So right here, what you have basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You've got these 12, but he had another 10 verses because there's a whole big section about Adam's fall and reconciliation that didn't get in here. But you would have been singing for a long time if you had had that in there. And because originally it had a text about, if you go over, you've got part of it. If you look down at the bottom of the page, he originally said, instead of pleased as man with us to dwell, Jesus our Emmanuel, he said, pleased as man with men to peer, Jesus our Emmanuel dear, our Emmanuel here, you know. But then people thought that was a little clumsy, and then they took it away and added the us to make it inclusive, and all of, you know, so there were many little changes that happened. The biggest thing, of course, was that this would originally never have been sung to this melody, because these words are from 1739, and this melody was first put with it in 1857. So what most likely happened, you all know Hark the Herald Angels Sing by heart. So flip over, keep your finger there, but flip over to 663. This is not necessarily the tune, but this is the kind of tune that would have been used if you were singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing back in Wesley's day, you know. So when in 1857 you added the melody that you have now on 270, which is called Mendelssohn, because Felix Mendelssohn in 1840 was asked to write a piece of music for brass and men's chorus to celebrate the 400th anniversary of Gutenberg's printing press. So he wrote this four-movement cantata for male chorus. The second movement, of course, it was all in German, but the second movement in a later English translation starts out like this. It was very solemn. Where the main serene we flowing meets the waters of the Rhine, there the sacred word, etc. And then it goes on. There it was that Gutenberg. There it was that Gutenberg. There it was that Gutenberg gave the world its breathless work, etc. It's all about the Bible. Okay, so then he did that. So the original, of course, in German was Gutenberg, ein deutsches Mann. Right, so when you sing this from now on, if you want to just sing Gutenberg at that moment, you know, perfectly welcome, because that was the original. It was all about Gutenberg. And so what they had to do, because of Mendelssohn's tune, they had to add that little refrain, because his piece was longer than just the original 7777. When Mendelssohn wrote that in 1840, and the other three movements are very forgettable. But when someone said to him afterward, you know, that is a wonderful melody and would work very nicely for a hymn. And Mendelssohn, Felix Mendelssohn is supposed to have said, you know, I do think it's a good melody. It will never work for anything sacred. Well, he was wrong. And there it is, and now we have Gutenberg. 275. Angels from the Realms of Glory. Another wonderful, great hymn. This one by James Montgomery, who did the text, who was at his time thought to be in the same league with Shelley and Byron as a poet. And he was a newspaper man who, his big thing, if you can imagine, this is 1840s in England, and he was one of the prime people writing in the paper about how terrible slavery was. And he, in fact, was put in prison, not for that, but because he wrote some years earlier an editorial in his paper praising the fall of the Bastille, and was put in prison for doing that because they didn't want him writing about things such as that. And so he wrote a number of wonderful hymns, including this hymn, which originally had 5 verses. And what was kind of wonderful about it is that you had a verse about the angels, which you have here, then you had a verse about the shepherds, then you had a verse about the wise men. But then, what you don't have is there was a verse about the saints and a verse about the sinners. And some of you still know, I'm sure, the saints first, because it's from your childhood. Saints before the altar, bending, bowing low in hope and fear, suddenly the Lord descending in his temple shall appear. Okay, and, well, we still sing that one at Plymouth. But anyway, because I kept it in. All right, the sinner verse has kind of gone away, because somehow, right at Christmas time, this isn't quite what we want to be singing about. Sinners wrung with true repentance, doomed for guilt to endless pain, justice now revokes your sentence, mercy calls you, break your chains. Right, so that went away. We aren't doing that anymore. But the whole idea of the original was that James Montgomery was doing this after Psalm 85, which was the psalm for Christmas Day about mercy and peace are come together. The verse that then was added, the one you have is the last verse, is just a doxology verse. It's nothing to do with the original. But the verse that got added is the one, though an infant now we view him, Christ shall fill his father's throne, gather all the nations to him, every knee shall then bow down. So that's the one we do at Plymouth. We add that one in. So there have been all these changes that happen. And so you'll often find in hymnals, they will say something like a name of who wrote the words, and then they'll often put ALT for altered, which is what I do at Plymouth. And so everybody just knows that, you know. And of course, I have a few devoted souls who, if it's a hymn that, and then we just have it in the bulletin, but they'll check out the hymnal. What has he changed back here? To see what has Brunel added, what, you know. And it's usually, they go, good change, good change. I go, thank you. Thank you very much. So you'll notice also we were talking about how these tunes get names. This one's called Regent Square. And the reason Henry Smart, who wrote this, was organist at St. Philip's Church, which is located at Regent Square in London. So obviously you could call it that. Just a couple others, and then time is up. We talked about how you could do, how you could mix a hymn together, and let's just try that. If you could put in, hold two different numbers, 511 and 742. 511 and 742. Because both of them are going to be in the same meter, 8787D. And just a quick word about these two. You know, what a friend we have in Jesus. It's this old, very kind of sentimental tune. The words by Joseph Scriven, he's just a really sad story. I mean, he was to be wed to this woman when he was 25, and the day this is in Ireland, where he lived, and the day before the wedding, she drowned in a lake. So he left Ireland and moved to Canada, and then he was married to some other woman, and then she drowned in a pond. He drowned in a pond, that's right. Before that, she died of TB, that's right. But then when he died, I mean, this is kind of fascinating. When he died, they buried her. She was buried like this, and they buried him like this so that at the resurrection, they would stand up and see each other. Yes, it's true. True story. Okay. That's important to know. You need to know. So he wrote this wonderful text, What a Friend We Have in Jesus, which I happen to love the text. I just don't like that it's been placed with a tune that tends to become so sentimental that the words have no strength to them. Because people tend to just kind of, it just becomes pretty banal. So, but if you go over to 5:11 with this wonderful tune, which you'll see at the bottom is called Ebenezer, the original name of the tune was Tony Botell, Tune in a Bottle, which was all fictitious, but the guy who wrote it, Thomas Williams, called it that because he wanted people to think that he had found the tune in a bottle that had washed up on the shore of Wales. And he had taken this tune out of the bottle and said, look what I found. Well, wrong. He composed it. But anyway, and so then they called it Ebenezer. And of course, the text that I think of with this one, which isn't in this hymnal, is the one, Once to Every Soul and Nation Comes the Moment to Decide, which was a text written in 1845 by James Lowell not a hymn at all, but as a poem, a warning that the United States should not get involved with going to war with Mexico. And so he wrote this whole thing. So the whole text about once to every man or nation comes the moment to decide, it was all about Mexico and the U.S. going to war. It had nothing to do with anything else. And so all these verses, basically, thy strong word. I mean, if you go into, lo on those who dwelt in darkness, I mean, this was really the Americans who didn't know the story about Mexico. I mean, so it was really not necessarily a Christian text to begin with. It's become that. So, but they are the same meter. So, let's sing What a Friend We Have in Jesus, and let's sing... The other very nice thing about hymnals. You can do whatever you wish. But I just think that has a lot. Okay, two more, and we're done. Some hymns, of course, have many different tunes. In this book, for instance, you have the great hymn, All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name. Here it's set to the tune Coronation, which... you all know. Right. But over the years, it has had a number of other tunes that it has been set to. And I, one year at Plymouth, we did three Sundays and sang All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name to three different tunes. And so we sang William Shrubsole's tune, Miles Lane, that one. I Salvation Army tune that James Ellers did. I'm sorry. It's really great. You get to sing Crown Him about 8 times at the end. Okay, but look at just number 599. One of the things that hymnals have done, not just the Lutheran hymnal, over the years, and I mention this one because we're going to be singing it as part of the liturgy on Sunday. So you have Lord Jesus, Think on Me, this wonderful tune, Southwell. Now, originally, this would have been done with gathering tones. Gathering tones were very common in England because it sort of meant that the first note was longer and kind of got us together. And so that meant that the word Lord and the word and the word from were all 2 beats, not 1 beat. Okay? So that you'd have... did that, where there was sort of what would you kind of call just a gathering moment. D, and then you kind of get going with it right there. So when we sing it Sunday, it's not in this, it's been, you know, cut down and not put in that version. Let's end with number 631. Another great, great hymn. I was very fortunate for about 12 years at Plymouth that our senior minister was a Welshman. And, of course, Plymouth, it being an independent church all by itself, when it was time to find a minister, just as a search committee. And so they looked around and found this guy in Wales. And so Vivian Jones showed up, dear, wonderful Vivian, who, of course, spoke English, but had never preached in English in his life. Before he came, he'd always preached in Welsh. He was in the old Welsh Congregational Church. So it took people a little while to get used to that thick Welsh accent, you know. But one of the things that, of course, he did, I mean, he was never demanding, but he would come to me, Philip, I hope from time to time a Welsh hymn. I said, yes, Vivian, there will be Welsh hymns. They're all good. Yes, they are. I don't know a bad one. And I said, no, there aren't. So we often sang hymns, but of course, he would, like this hymn, as you see the name at the bottom, he would say, I hope we are singing Hifredal, you know, and I went, oh, yes, Hifredal, we would do. And then we would sing Bryn Calfaria, which, you know, it's this one. And I said to him, what does Bryn Calfaria mean? Philip, it means Bryn is the word for hill, and Calfaria, of course, is Calvary. Oh. And of course, because the hymn, no English text that we have in any hymnal refers to that text. It's all been changed over the years to something else. But anyway, he always loved Hifredal, and he would sing it in there, but he'd sing it in Welsh, of course, as we were all singing in English, and that was fine. And the interesting thing about this Charles Wesley text, Wesley got the idea of this text from John Dryden, who had originally written a hymn about love divine, but it was about, but Dryden's text was about Venus and Adonis. And so... So Wesley just Christianized the thing and turned it around to be what you have here. The one word that's been changed that I think is fascinating is if you look at the second verse, third line, take away the love of sinning. That's not the original. The original was take away our power of sinning. Which is quite a different meaning then take away the love of sinning. And I know when I then changed it at Plymouth so that we sang Power of Sinning, people, they were checking it out. I said, hey, I'm just going back to Wesley, folks. This was what Wesley had done. And you'll also find that I think one of the great things, and I wanted to end with this one, because again, as we started, you'll see that it's, again, one of the reasons it's so easy to sing is that it's basically stepwise. And then one little leap. And then you repeat the whole thing again. And then you go back up, but you start downward. All stepwise. And then here's the only little skips. Stepwise hymn. I mean, there is just a reason why those are easier to sing than anything else, you know, when you do it. So let's just close with a verse of Love Divine and 1, 2, 3. To make it all work. Well, as you see, I have this slight fondness for hymns. So, yeah. So if there are any questions, I'll try to answer them. You can just, you'll see me around and you can just ask. We won't do question and answer now. It's time for dinner. Thanks.